Chris Tanev is back, and the podcast is back.
You didn't know your elbow came up and hit him in the head?
Are you asking me, or are you telling me?
No, I'm asking you.
You're an expert?
No, it was on the replay.
So you're an expert?
That's right, Cam. We're back. My name is Dimitri Filipovich, and that those sweet, sultry tones you heard to start the podcast were those of Cam Charon, who's sitting across from me in my so-called swanky Yale Town apartment.
Sup?
Cam, it's good to be back. We haven't recorded a podcast in quite a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And luckily, we actually planned to record this podcast. We talked about it yesterday, so... we didn't even know about the whole Chris Tanev signing news. So that kind of...
There's actually a lot of hockey news today.
Right.
It's, what, August 22nd?
Yeah.
There's so much to get to.
Yeah. And I think, obviously, the first natural thing to get to would be talking about the signing of Douglas Murray.
Oh, boy. Really?
No, but in
Because the Canucks were, once again, bridesmaids.
Right. Yeah.
No. Never the bride.
For sure. Well, let's get to that quickly because I think there is a point to be made there. Because I think it was roughly a week ago, maybe 10 days ago, mm-hmm. that a report surfaced. I think Jim Jameson reported it.
Yeah.
That the Canucks were kicking the tires.
Yeah, kicking the tires.
That's a direct quote. On the potential of bringing in UFA defenseman Douglas Murray.
Yes. Well, what I found interesting about that was Jameson came out with a report the exact same day that Jameson came out with, or the day after a report that Jameson had from Tanev's agent,
right,
about Tanev going potentially to Europe.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to see the contrast, and it's obvious that both were a negotiation tactic. And I think a plausible theory,
yeah,
is half joke, half plausible theory, but Lawrence Gilman just tells Tanev's agent, look, we'll give you whatever Douglas Murray gets from somebody.
Yeah.
So Mark Bergevin goes out. Overpays for Douglas Murray.
Right. And just like, oh, man, shouldn't have agreed to that.
Yeah.
No, but I think the Canucks definitely dodged the bullet there because Douglas Murray is just an atrocious hockey player at this point of his career, at least.
Yeah. Well, I think that the Canucks may have learned their lesson last year with Cam Barker. And it's funny that sometimes there are these players that the Canucks are linked to because they're a popular team. They're going to be linked to everybody.
Yeah.
And they miss out. And
then people freak out.
Everybody misses out. You know, if you're casting a lot of nets, everybody's casting the same nets. It's not the Canucks against the world. It's the Canucks against, 39 other teams.
Right.
29
other teams, yeah.
Well, no, 29 in the NHL and then 10.
KHL, Swiss Elite League, Swedish Elite League, all that. Yeah. And, I mean, I think there are a few instances where, the whole bridesmaids thing was warranted. But obviously for something like this, it's where we're just joking around.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, enough beating around the bush. Let's get to Chris Tanev. As you called it, Chris Timus.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty witty. He signed for 1 year, $1.5 million.
Yep.
If you guys haven't heard yet, I don't know why you wouldn't have heard it yet. But how do you feel about that deal?
It's $300,000 more than I thought.
Right.
They still have enough money left to sign an important forward, I think.
Right.
Which is what they need.
So do you think?
And I'm fine with the fact that they didn't go long term. I think he's a guy that you need to bridge deal. He just doesn't have the offensive potential to be worth lining up through some prime years.
So do you think that this means that the potential of bringing back Andrew Alberts is gone?
Oh, I hope so.
You hope so?
Yeah. Although it's interesting when you look down the roster and now you look at their 5, 6, and 7 guys who are purported to be.
We'll go with whatever you want, man.
Yannick Weber, Frankie Corrado, and Chris Tanev,
right,
all are right-handed shots.
Right.
So over the last year or so, I've come to really notice right shots versus left shots.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that there are much fewer good right shooters.
Yeah.
Not to say that, oh, good on the Canucks for getting a whole bunch of right-handed shooting defensemen, but
yeah.
The point more so, it's just interesting that they're not going to have, they're going to have one guy playing on his non-natural side.
Yeah. Well, back to the deal itself. I mean, yeah, I was kind of in the same camp as you. I thought he'd get somewhere between 1.2 and 1.3 million. Mm-hmm. I was actually going to publish a post very soon, kind of looking at guys that were in the similar situation as him. Like 22, 23-year-old RFA defensemen who recently signed with their teams. And it seemed like most of his comparables were in that 1 to 1.5 million range. I mean,
well, the
he's not Nick Leddy.
Minus one of them, Jared Spurgeon.
Yeah.
Who, his deal comes in at what, 2.8?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
It's something huge. And when you look at a lot of statistics, you find that Spurgeon and Tanev are very, very comparable players.
Yeah.
Spurgeon is a little bit better in every category.
Yeah, I think he has more upside, at least offensively speaking.
Yes, that's true. But has he shown it, though, in his career? He's only got...
I'll look it up right now, but I'd guess to say that what he's done so far in his career will probably never even be matched by Chris Tanev at any point of his career.
Yeah, that's true.
So...
But it's just interesting to look at those two. They have the same background, both signed as free agents. Spurgeon was drafted by the Islanders, but... left unsigned.
Yeah, I mean, in 2011-12, Spurgeon had 23 points in 70 games.
Okay, well, that's pretty good.
Last year, 15 and 39.
That's pretty good.
He'll probably top out as like a 30-point defenseman, which I don't think Chris Tanev will ever even sniff.
That's true.
So, but yeah, no. At the same time, I thought the Spurgeon contract was a little rich for my blood anyway, so I mean.
Yeah. It's funny, though, that you know, you look at all these statistics, and Spurgeon is just a little bit better at everything, including... penalty differential, which is Tanev's bread and butter.
Yep.
Spurgeon's one of the two defensemen in the league better than him. I think the other is John Michael Lyles.
Yeah. Who's
probably
Brian Campbell's pretty high up there too, right?
Yeah, but actually,
he doesn't take penalties.
Yeah, Brian Campbell might be the most underrated player in the NHL.
Yeah. Well, just because of his cap hit that people kind of, you know, overlook him. But I mean, fact of the matter is he's a pretty damn good
hockey player. And I hate the fact that Dale Talon has got him twice.
So Tanev will still be an RFA next summer.
Yeah.
For at least a few more years.
I can't see him getting much of a raise on this.
Yeah, I can't either. And I briefly mentioned this in the analysis post that is up at CanucksArmy.com right now. Mm-hmm. Ian McIntyre, and he wasn't the only one. I saw a few other kind of beat reporter types toss this out there. If Chris Tanev does what people expect him to do, quote unquote, he'll become a lot richer next summer. I don't know what people are expecting from Chris Tanev. He's a third pairing defenseman who drives play against inferior competition.
Yeah.
He doesn't take penalties. Yeah. He draws penalties at a decent rate. Yeah. He has no offensive upside. He's a third pairing defenseman.
He's very good.
He's a valuable asset, no doubt.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that Frankie Corrado has more top four experience than Chris Tanev. By the way, for those of you who aren't collective bargaining agreement geeks, Chris Tanev's qualifying offer next summer will be $1.5 million because players with salaries over $1 million do not get a raise.
Right.
So qualifying offer, just the mandatory raise, player can choose to accept or not, except for players making a certain amount.
Yep.
And... will he have arbitration rights? He'll have arbitration.
He does have arbitration
rights. He will have arbitration rights.
Yep.
So that will be interesting.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
I can't see him using them. I think that there's a better chance of the team taking him to them because there's just no offensive.
No, I've seen this point made. Like, arbitration is good for guys that have good counting stats. And Chris Tanev is going to have like 5 points.
Yeah.
So he's not going to, you know, I'm sure the team values him more than the arbitration process would.
Yeah.
All right. Well, is there anything else you wanted to touch on?
Can we call him the abacus?
No, we can't.
Oh.
Is there anything else you wanted to touch on about the abacus? Or do you think we've kind of touched all our bases?
I mean, 10 minutes
on Chris Tanev is pretty good. I'm sure his agent's pretty happy about that.
Yeah.
I heard that was in his a clause in his contract. Canucks Army has to talk about him for 10 minutes.
On every podcast.
Every podcast. The Tan Man. By the way... just in terms of Chris Tanev and expectations, I think you're guilty for it. I think you made these people have these unreasonable expectations regarding him. I think if you never pumped his tires as much as you did,
it's true.
He'd kind of be this
I was pumping his tires a lot in the 2012 season.
Yeah, and then now every time he does anything, everyone just tweets at you. It's pretty great. When he scored that overtime winner against the Edmonton Oilers, how many tweets did you get? Probably like at least 20 directed your way, right? Yeah.
But to be fair, that was the only time. That was the only Canucks goal I've cheered in 2 years or so. What's really funny, my sister just went off to university for the first time.
Right.
This is the first message I get from her.
Yeah.
One of her friends is a loyal Canucks Army reader.
Right.
Who went to the same school. My friend wants your autograph on a picture of Chris Tanev. Any chance you want to send one with Dad when he comes to Montreal? That's the first text I get from my sister. Last time I had seen her, she was crying outside the airport gates. She just didn't want to go. She wanted to go. She didn't want to go.
Yeah.
And...
well, you know what? I think you and Chris Tanev are going to be forever linked.
Yeah.
So you just got to embrace it.
I will.
Okay. So at this point of the show, we tweeted out from, I think, both of our accounts and the Canucks Army account that we want to make this podcast a little more interactive. We want to get the listeners and the readers involved. So we asked for your questions, and we got some interesting ones.
Did we?
So I think we should tackle the big one out right off the start.
Yeah.
At Taj1944 asks, why do hashtag fancy stats suck?
Because I think that there's a lot of people who try to look at cents values rather than dollar values and try and quantify these menial differences between two players when ultimately what matters is the big differences. I think that there are a lot of people who are going to look at, people are going to look at Dale Weiss as being a preferable fourth line option than, I don't know, George Parros. When they play for such a little time, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
If you get somebody like Clark MacArthur on your fourth line, that's a big dollar difference. But you don't need fancy stats to be able to tell that you need a guy that scores a lot, or that scoring goals matters.
Yeah. No, I think that what we need... what we really need to point out here is that there's this wild perception by some people that we solely look at, like, just behindthenet.com and different Excel spreadsheets, and that's, like, we see some numbers and we just say, all right, that's the opinion I'm forming on this player, and I'm not letting anything else influence it.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know a single person that does that, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no extreme there where someone solely looks at numbers and formulates an opinion on a player that they won't budge off of. Like, I think that where the numbers come in handy is that unless you're a Corey S. from, like, the shutdown line, he watches an insane amount of hockey because he tracks all that stuff.
I think he's watched about half the games from last season.
Yeah. And unless you're him, chances are you're just not going to be able to see enough of every single player to have very strong opinions on their game.
Yes.
And that's where the numbers kind of come in, where you can see something and you can be like, all right, this is how he's performed. And then next time I watch him play or see his team play, we'll see, like, if that lines up with what the numbers are saying.
Yeah.
I think that's where they're useful, right?
Yeah. And I think one of the other problems is that when you watch and don't look for any other opinion, right. You know, you don't look for anything else. You just don't, like, you don't watch enough games. And when you do watch a lot of games, it's usually the playoffs when everyone's hurt. The game is a little bit different, structured differently.
Yep.
And you can't really tell a player's value.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Hockey statistics are not good enough to be able to tell players' values right now, and I'm not even knowing that a player's value last year is all that useful, because what you need to know, what really counts is, and something I've been going with for the last 10 years or so of my theory in hockey, is that the most important goal isn't the first one, it's the next one.
Right.
And, you know, you can use Corsi and shooting percentages and shots and goal to figure out who's going to score the next goal.
Yeah.
And that's, calculate the odds from there, and that's all I really care about. I think that, you know, you can tell who's valuable or not just by looking at goals and assists and points and plus minus, but you really want to know what those players are going to do in the future.
Right.
So,
don't
succumb to Ville Leino disease.
And I mean, we should point out that there's always going to be guys, and I mean, for Canucks fans, David Booth is a great example that what we'd expect them to do based on their underlying numbers kind of just don't match up with what's actually happening. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
David Booth, for a long time now, his shooting percentage has been remarkably low.
It's been two seasons now. Three seasons now.
He drives play, but it just, you know, it's not something not clicking there, right? Yeah. And that happens. There's certain outliers like that, and there's certain outliers in the other direction that kind of year after year seem to pull a rabbit out of their ass.
And one of the things I've noticed about I cover the Leafs a lot too at the Leafs Nation, and there's a lot of people who are really trying to find out reasons why the Toronto Maple Leafs had such a high PDO with Randy Carlyle last season, such a low one with Ron Wilson the year before.
Yep.
And there aren't enough people. There really aren't enough people. There are too many people who are overthinking the problem that, well, maybe it's just randomness. We can't tell these events happening. They happen to two or three teams a year. We can't focus on those teams. We have to... You can't pay too much attention to outliers.
Yep.
And a lot of people spend so much of their time trying to find out the next outlier when that's just not feasible.
Yep. And it's all just like, you know, we all still have so much to learn about analyzing the game. And I think we're obviously, hopefully, trending in the right direction.
People, I think we're
becoming more accepting of certain things. But, you know, it's all just like one big puzzle, and every single little thing kind of helps contribute to hopefully getting there one day. So I don't know if we've answered the why the fantasy stats questions suck.
Yeah.
I think our answer is they don't, but
they do and they don't.
You know, if you're listening to this podcast and a reader of Canucks Army, I'd like to think that you're at least, we're winning you over.
I'm going to point out here some rumored details of Mikhail Grabowski's contract with the Capitals.
Okay. I don't know why that's prevalent here.
Well, one year, $3 million, which is exactly what I put him at in my Canucks Army post about him.
Yeah, well, I think that's smart. I think his agent did a good job there. I would also have taken a one-year deal. I mean, he's going to a team where, who's their second-line center? Marcus Johansson?
It's all just rumored right now.
Right, but let's assume he does. I mean, their second-line center is like Marcus Johansson, who played on the wing a lot last year. So, I mean, he has a great opportunity there to play some heavy minutes.
Yeah.
In a more favorable situation where you can get 55 to 60 points in that range.
Yeah.
And then next summer when the cap goes up and, you know, teams are going to probably throw a lot more money at him.
I think I really hope that he ends up in Washington, because then all the people telling me, oh, well, Randy Carlyle won a Norris Trophy.
Yeah.
Ergo, he knows what he's doing.
Right.
Yeah, well, Adam Oates is in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. No, and I mean it's...
I disagree with Randy Carlyle a lot.
That would be a big deal for them, because, I mean... When I was looking at their team recently, when I was just like kind of trying to make my predictions for what's going to happen this season, I mean, there was a glaring hole left by Mike Ribeiro.
Yeah.
They desperately needed someone, and he'd do a good job of fitting that role.
It's like a cigar burn.
I love Mike Ribeiro. All right, let's move on to our next question. At Bert the Tank.
Hello, Bert.
On Twitter. Hello, Bert. Long-time listener, first-time emailer, asks, what's all the hype about Horvat? His numbers weren't all that great, but scouts seem to like him. Why?
He's very handsome.
You know a lot more about Horvat than I, because you write about the CHL.
Yes.
And I'm assuming you've watched him play at least a couple times.
Yeah, I was at the Memorial Cup in Shawinigan in 2012,
right,
which was when Bo Horvat was in his rookie year along with Max Domi.
Mm-hmm.
So they were both, it was really, the thing about Horvat and Domi, they're always going to be linked because they've been paired together for a long time, but they were, you know, they were key players on a really good team, probably the CHL's best team.
Right.
As rookies. So they're coming from a long way. And the difference between Horvat and Domi is that Domi is the finisher. Horvat is more of the setup man, the defensive forward.
Yep.
I think he played a little bit more minutes.
Yep.
He's a type of guy that will create in the neutral zone.
Yep.
And I looked at a few zone entry numbers for the Memorial Cup. I haven't finished I don't think I've even have the tapes left over. It's really tough to do zone entries for junior hockey. And him and Domi were about equal in that regard. So I think the problem is that a lot of people are going to judge him versus Domi.
Mm-hmm.
But really, they're different players. Horvat's a centerman. He's a two-way guy. He creates in the neutral zone. Domi creates in the offensive zone. I think that Domi's always going to have more offensive numbers. Horvat, we don't have fancy stats for. And this is a situation where they'd be useful to figure out, well, who drove the play when they were on the ice. Obviously, Domi got more points when he was paired away from Horvat because Horvat was using that time to shut down opposing players. So he's a playmaker shutdown type.
Right.
That's sort of my opinion on Horvat. I never talked to him at the 2012 Memorial Cup.
Right.
But he seems like a nice kid. He's very handsome.
And that's the most important thing.
And we can have a lot of good Bonos headlines.
Well, I'm looking for. I apologize. I can't find who asked us this question, but someone had also asked us kind of to discuss Brendan Gaughan's, Bo Horvat, and some of those other young guys, and whether what you think the chances are of them actually.
Some of those other, you mean Hunter?
Yeah, sure, whatever.
Gaunt's, Shinkarak, and
yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a very much chance at all that Shinkarak's going to make the team. Yeah. But specifically Horvat and Gaunt's, what would you place the chances of them making the Canucks out of camp?
Horvat, I think, is a zero. Yeah. I just don't think that there's spots that there's space on the roster.
Yep.
Gaunt's, it really depends on what he does in camp, and it depends on what Mike Santarelli and Ben Ferrio do in camp.
Right.
I think that those are the two guys that could really.
Mike Santarelli and Ben Ferrio.
Well, they're two depth guys.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. They're it depends whether they take up a roster spot or not.
Yeah.
And there's just too many guys that the Canucks have that aren't waiver eligible. So Dale Vise isn't waiver eligible.
Yep.
Jordan Schrader isn't waiver eligible.
Yep.
And Tom Sestito isn't. That's the problem with having. That's the problem with not having rookies on your fourth line.
Yep.
Coming straight up from the minors is. There's no way to really create that competition in camp.
Right.
I'm hoping that Tortorella and the team sort of find a way to create, five guys competing for three depth spots on the team.
Right.
But I don't think that's feasible for this year. Maybe for next.
Yep.
So I just don't think the roster spaces are available for Gaunt's to make it.
Yeah.
It depends on Santarelli.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't really think that. I'd be actually kind of surprised if either of those guys made the team out of camp, especially Horvat.
Yeah.
I think Gilman appeared on. Lawrence Gilman appeared on Team 1040 last week, and he made some good points about how they're expecting him to go back to London and be the captain. And I think they're hosting the Memorial Cup this year, he's got the World Junior Championships and all this stuff. Like, they're expecting this to be a big developmental year for him. So I don't really see him coming up and playing on the third or fourth line for
He was very impressive at Ivan Hlinka camp last summer too, and around those other guys who are Team Canada hopefuls.
Yeah.
There are basically three guys that stood out for me: Nathan MacKinnon, Bo Horvat, and Jordan Subban.
Right.
And if you go back and look at my writing for the junior hockey blog there, it's sort of funny to look at.
But
I think another chance that Gaunt has to make the team is if David Booth is still injured when the season begins, and he might get 9 games.
Right. Well, but we should point out when we're talking about Horvat that we watched the draft together.
Yes.
And when news broke the Canucks had acquired the 9th overall pick, you were much more vocal than me on this, but we both agreed that Hunter Shinkarak was the logical choice there.
No way. Yeah, they traded up. They're getting Shinkarak.
Yeah. And we were both pretty excited about it. And then, I guess it worked out well, but kind of sometimes better to be lucky than to be smart.
Well, I remember when people were making hashtags for last season that, stop winning for MacKinnon. Skid for Popeye's kid, but Suck for Shinkarak was also in there, and his stock just fell the months before draft day.
Yeah. No, I know. It's crazy. And
he was a lottery pick.
I think everyone agrees. Not even just a lottery pick. I mean, at the start of the season, he was being dubbed as like a potential like top three pick. Yeah. That's at least what I was reading.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm pretty happy about that. All right. There's a few other things I'd like to discuss before we wrap things up. One of them is Jordan Schrader. You wrote an interesting post yesterday. Mm-hmm. We're recording this on a Thursday afternoon. I think it's going to be up on
11:30.
It's 11:33. It's going to be posted Friday morning. Mm-hmm. So I guess 2 days ago now, you wrote an interesting post about Jordan Schrader, the whole waivers process, and the forwards for the Canucks. And you seem to be very, very down on Jordan Schrader as a player. I disagreed somewhat on Twitter. And I hate that you're making me, well, you're not making me, but I hate that
I'm making
you. I hate that you're making me be pro Jordan Schrader, because I was the person that was so down on Jordan Schrader in January when it was announced that the season would in fact be taking place, that I wrote a memorable article saying that Andrew Rebbit is the logical choice for a second line center over Jordan Schrader.
Yes.
So I'm not a Jordan Schrader fan.
No.
I watched him in the AHL a lot during the lockout because we were covering them for Canucks Army, and I was very unimpressed. I honestly thought that he would get eaten up in the NHL. And while, you know, he wasn't a world beater or anything, I thought that he had some moments last year. Mm-hmm. But you seem to think that if the Canucks can get anything of value for him, they should.
If they can get anything of value, that would include, you know, 600 minutes where I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. But I just don't. You look at the Canucks stats last year, most of the underlying categories, and he's just at the bottom of too many of them.
Right.
And it's not that. And it's not that he's an outlier. His on ice shooting percentage was 11th out of 17 players over the last two seasons. He's only ahead of guys like, actually he's ahead of Ryan Kessler in that regard, which is funny, but Max LaPierre, Sammy Paulson, David Booth, Dale Vise, and Andrew Gordon.
Right.
His shots per 60 minutes is just so worrisome. He's down at 3.78 shots per 60 minutes. And that's worse on the Canucks over the last 2 years. And these are from hockeyanalysis.com, by the way. Schrader's just at the bottom of he's at the bottom of the league in that category, right? He's ahead of a bunch of goons. He's ahead of Brad Staubitz and George Parros. His individual points percentage, which is a really good indicator of who controls play in the offensive zone.
Right.
You can see a lot of the a lot of the super skill guys have really high ones up in the 80s.
Right.
And Jared Smithson, the worst regular player in the NHL, is the only forward below 50.
Right.
Jordan Schrader is at he's at 54%. And this is only 31 games, so it's a really small sample, but the problem is that the shot statistics aren't there, the team shot statistics aren't there. Right. They just don't create a lot of offense when Schrader's on the ice.
Right.
And that's sort of my reasoning for him. If there's a team out there that thinks that he has some offensive value, go for it. See what you can get for him. I think that there are enough signs that at this point in his career to indicate that he's not going to be anything big unless like, again, hockey's random. Right. He could be an outlier.
Right. I don't know. I'm looking at his Wowies right now, his with or without yous.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you noticed this, but when him and Mason Raymond run the ice together, he was pretty dominant.
Yeah.
Wildly. I don't know what that's all about, but the Corsi 4 percentage was zone adjusted, was 54.6, and the team scored 62.5% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Those are pretty good numbers. But then you look at his numbers with pretty much every other player, and they're just...
Yeah. And, keeping him around to keep alive the always dynamic Mason Raymond.
Right. You got to bring those... Mason Raymond's still a free agent. You know, maybe a team like Florida takes him, and then they look at these numbers, and they pay for Jordan Schrader as well?
Maybe.
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 This is the team that signed Scott Gomez afterwards.
That's right. And they signed Steve Pinizzotto, former Canuck. Oh. All right. I think that's about it. Did we miss anything that you wanted to discuss Canucks related?
We got a question. Didn't you get a question in there about Jason Garrison?
We did.
What's the question?
I forget who. I can't find it right now. But someone asked, what were your thoughts on Jason? Pretty much, what were your thoughts on Jason Garrison's first season as a Canuck?
Okay, I think he was good. Moving on.
It was at Ray Brinston.
Yeah, Ray, he's good.
Ray, he was good. Would you say that he was the team's second best defenseman last year?
I would.
Yeah, me too. Hopefully he'll be...
He was a joy to watch in the playoffs, too.
Right. What do you... Okay, so... I guess we'll close on... What do you think this coming season holds for him? Like, do you think that they're going to keep him with Ham Hughes, or do you think that they're going to have to split them up? And do you think he's going to finally be on the first unit power play? These are all valid questions that I have about Jason Garrison.
It depends, you know. Torts was notorious. It was interesting last season. He used Anton Strom and Michael Delzato with his top line.
Right.
And he used Ryan McDonough and Dan Girardi almost exclusively against opposing top players. And he's done that for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So, and the Canucks certainly have the personnel. They have a great top four.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Canucks have the best top four defense in the league.
Yeah, I think so too.
So, you know, Ham Hughes Bieksa could be that Girardi McDonough role.
Right.
And leaving Garrison Edler. I think that's a pretty to play with the Sedins.
I think that would be... I think they'd definitely cause a mayhem.
I think that's a conversation that they're going to have after training camp, and we'll see what... we'll see what happens.
I mean, in any case, I hope he's on the power play, because...
Yeah.
I don't know how many more times I can freak out about this, but... Probably a few more, at least. All right, Cam, that's going to be it.
All right.
For today's episode. 32 minutes of quality late August hockey talk.
Yeah. Coming up next, Bro Jake and David Pratt.
Bro Jake. Awesome. Do you have anything to plug?
Oh, I didn't even think about it.
You always do this. This is what we do at the end of the podcast.
If you have an iPhone, there's an app out there called Pocket Planes, which is an airline simulator.
Okay. Right.
I'm going to plug that.
Okay. Any work you want to plug?
Any work?
That you're responsible for?
I don't know. Just read everything.
What's going on at Leafs Nation? You guys are doing a prospect series too.
We're doing a prospect series.
Right.
It's our first time doing it, and we're beginning to realize that some of these guys are... We had David Brohl, who was a point of game big guy in the Sault Ste. Marie, ranked at 20.
Yeah,
which is just sort of the contrast between that and Kellen Lane, who was ranked, 9th?
10th.
Oh.
Yeah, and the funny thing about that is it was a joy to write about Kevin Lane. Kevin Lane.
What's his name?
Kevin. Because numbers like, I don't know, whatever, let's say 16 to 20 or something were just like excruciatingly painful.
Yeah.
Just because, like, you know, you don't want to just depress the crap out of the readers. You don't want to just be like, this guy sucks and he's never going to play in the NHL. Yeah. So thanks for reading anyways.
Pretty much.
But that's pretty much the synopsis of their skills. So it was actually nice to write about a player that might actually play for the Canucks one day.
We have Tyler Biggs coming up in our series soon.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to want to read that, and you're going to want to read the comments section, because that guy is the most polarizing player on the planet. I'm going to plug somebody else's work too.
Right.
Nassim Talib, Lebanese writer. He wouldn't like me calling him Lebanese, but he is. That's where he was from. He has this book out in 2007 called The Black Swan, The Impact of the Highly Improbable.
Okay.
I would recommend going down to your local bookstore. Library,
okay.
And, it's just cheaper. And reading it. I think it's an easy read. You can cruise through in a couple days.
Right. Plus, I don't even know if bookstores still exist.
Oh, they do. I kept one in business in Toronto all last summer.
Right. And obviously, if you guys, I'd hope most of you have read it or have heard of it, but Rob Volman's Hockey Abstract.
Yes.
I'm actually current. See, I got it a while ago, and I've just been slowly, like, chipping away at it. And it's been really hard because I would want to just sit down for, like, 5 hours and just breeze through it. But I'm just enjoying it bit by bit.
I had a plane ride to Prince Edward Island a couple weeks ago.
And you just blast through it?
Yeah, it's
great.
Done by our layover.
It's great. And the thing that I love about it is, I mean, we had that whole fancy stats discussion at the start of this podcast. Yeah. And I feel like Rob did a phenomenal job of...
explaining the limits, yeah.
Making it very, very digestible for people that might be venturing into it for the first time, right?
Yeah.
So I appreciated that.
Of course you did.
Oh, Cam. So people can follow you at Cam Charon on Twitter.
On Instagram. They can
check you out on Instagram.
Instacam Charon.
Instacam Charon. That's a classic. There's a lot of nature photos. I saw one of a chessboard.
Yes.
There's a lot of fun things going on there. You guys can follow me at Sawyer and Expert, no apostrophe.
What's your Instagram account?
I don't have one. Cam's pressuring me to get one. Maybe if the listeners of this podcast get on my case a lot, I'll do
true.
It. You guys, please.
Longest sign off ever.
Please keep reading CanucksArmy.com. We're going to continue with our prospect profile series, counting down to the actual good stuff now. And that's going to be it. Cam?
It's always a pleasure.
Yep.
Not an expert.
That's it, guys. Thank you.